Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and this is Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, September 19th, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Boy, what a difference a day makes.
Well, I guess they all add up, don't they?
And sometimes they don't make a difference at all, and I guess it just depends on the type of difference that it might be. But
you're going over my head or you're going under it, one or the other, Melody.
Probably over. Hey, we're looking at gold today, which that wasn't over. That was a little bit under, about $8 at $1,217. You have silver got hammered today, almost 4% at $1,794, down 68, just hammered. You have platinum down 10 at $1,342, and you have palladium down 18 at $814. The USDX today, of course, is trading stronger as the pound is getting hit today due to the no vote coming out of Scotland. You have the dollar up 48 at 84.73, and you have crude oil down 57 at 92.50. And the paper markets today, oh my gosh, Alibaba, Alibaba, Alibaba. It's like, yeah, they've been talking about Alibaba for the past how long? Hooray, it is finally over. You have some person making millions of dollars, and they could only manage $15 out of the Dow at 17,281. The Nasdaq was down 13, which is the tech stocks, 45.79, and the S&P was up basically unchanged at 2010. The 10-year yield is 2.59%, down 0.04. So it was really kind of a weird day, and the Alibaba finished the day 38% above its IPO price. And Al, I don't follow him every day because he's kind of changing a little bit of his website a little bit. It used to be lots and lots of commentary from Jim Sinclair. Now there's a lot of opinions that he places on there. But the news is good, and I do go there, and I always respected Jim Sinclair. He's just, the old timers are, they know what's going on, and they're people that you need to pay attention to. You know, and he talked about the Alibaba, you know, was the star of the day with the huge market debut. And again, you know, we've been talking about this. And now this company is worth more than some of the banks that brought it to the market. And he talked about long-term equity cycles that turned down as the equity markets raced to almost new highs almost daily. You have the U.S. dollar that is trading in decades-old overhead resistance with long-term dollar cycles due to turn down in the fourth quarter of this year. And, of course, then he brings up gold, which we have seen the long-term cycles have turned up, is plumbing previous lows and trading into major support. And this is what I'm bringing to, and I couldn't say it any better. He says, this is the classic example of popular delusions and the madness of the crowd. And he also brought something, cycles, everybody's talking cycles. He says there are probabilities but not absolutes, which I agree to. And the one thing that he wrote in his little commentary was he talked about the fundamentals. And this is the time when you have to return to the fundamentals, because the fundamentals are going to give guidance that can be given by history. And we talk about fundamentals all the time, Al, about how important they are. But the fundamentals, no matter what section or market you're in, it's the fundamentals that will tell you if it is something to have. So he said it very good today. And, certainly we've had the hammering of silver today. And is it a coincidence to the Shanghai exchange opening up early yesterday? Possible. We do know China loves to hit markets and then they come in and buy. So perhaps this is already something that we're seeing that put a little bit more pressure.
They opened the Shanghai Gold Exchange
right
about 11 days earlier than they'd originally planned, which is kind of interesting. I mean, you wonder, does that mean something, or is it just who knows? You know, you can't claim that that's necessarily evidence of something profound happening, but it is strange. You know, this is not a small thing. This is not like whether or not we're going to go grocery shopping today or tomorrow or a week from now. This is a major institution that's being created and launched, and you'd have to suppose that they're still going to be working on things right up to the last day. The idea that they opened for business 11 days early, it really surprises me. It's like a Trump hotel or something. If it's scheduled to open on the 1st of October, I guarantee it's not going to open on the 2nd, but it shouldn't open on the last day of September either. You know, you want to hit that date. And in this case, the Chinese didn't. And we can wonder, is there a reason, or are they just that relaxed? Are they anticipating something going to happen here in the near future?
You know, it's very possible. I mean, and you know, maybe this was their bet. Maybe they really thought, you know, everybody's looking for this black swan. You know, where is he? We all
hanging
know
out
he's
with
coming.
The unicorn.
Maybe. But maybe, you know, they started early thinking that perhaps whatever happened with Scotland could possibly have upset the apple cart and have some major, major concerns, not just in Europe, but around the world. So, you know, you see all these things being set up. And, we certainly have our problems here. And you're right. It could very well be a sign.
Well, there's some people who think there are going to be major changes in the fourth quarter of this year. But doesn't mean anything about the 11 days of September. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean anything about 11 days of September. So,
well,
I don't know. It's just odd. It's one of those things that's odd. We'll watch and see if anything significant comes of it or if it's just random noise. You mentioned Scotland. And, of course, what's interesting to me about Scotland and the story in Scotland is for the last week – that story has been building and building, and you almost couldn't open the news without seeing something about Scotland. And now that it's over, you almost can't find the news on Scotland. It's like that story just died. It's done. Scotland voted against. They rejected independence. And this is from the New York Times. That's the headline. Scotland rejects independence from the United Kingdom. Voters in Scotland rejected independence from Britain in a referendum that has threatened to break up the 307-year union between them, according to projections by BBC and Sky News early Friday, with 26 of 32 voting districts reported, 54.2% were against independence, and 45.7% were in favor. Here's another article from Reuters. Scottish nationalist leader Salmond quits after losing independence vote.
Poor loser.
Not necessarily.
He was bought off.
I don't think so. I don't know anything about that. I'm operating on the assumption, I don't know it to be true, but I'm operating on the assumption that it was a fair election. Scottish nationalist Alex Salmond resigned as leader of his party on Friday and will quit as first minister of his country after losing an independence referendum. For me as leader, my time is nearly over. But for Scotland, the campaign continues, and the dream will never die, Salmond told reporters in Edinburgh. Well, you know, the dream will never die. I think the dream is shot in the cheeks myself. I think the election in Scotland, I think it's a sad and terrible day. Several million Scotsmen had a chance to achieve independence and freedom. They didn't even have to fight for it. All they had to do was vote for freedom. And instead, the majority voted to remain as subjects and bondsmen to Great Britain. I can see why Mr. Salmond quit. After 300 years of people in Scotland allegedly dreaming of freedom from England, when Scotland finally had an opportunity to escape, most Scotsmen preferred to keep getting welfare and pensions from Great Britain rather than dare to assume the risks that necessarily attach to freedom. Senior citizens voted to secure their pensions and leave their children and grandchildren to rot in bondage. It's a shameful day for Scotland and a shameful day for mankind. Some of us had a chance to be free without even fighting for it, and we rejected the chance. I am appalled. The Scots didn't. They could have lifted up a torch for freedom and independence that might have inspired the world. But they instead preferred to remain on the dole. And the reason this rings my bell is not because I care about Scotland per se, but this implicates all of mankind, including the United States of America. And I am left to wonder how many Americans would do the same. If we had the chance to vote, really vote for freedom in this country, who would support that idea? Who would take advantage of that opportunity? You know, who would vote for freedom knowing that freedom means less government and more personal responsibility? In a nation where at least half of us receive some sort of government subsidy, support, welfare, how many of us would say to hell with that welfare, to hell with that subsidy, I'm voting for freedom? And the answer, I'm afraid, is not many. It appears that big government has seduced and enslaved most Americans with the proverbial free lunch. I doubt that many Americans will abandon the promise of a free lunch to fight or even vote for freedom. And if that's true, there'll be no resurrection of freedom, liberty, or independence in this country until after the federal government is finally bankrupted and the nation is wrecked by a fantastic economic and social collapse. And if none of that happens, I don't know. I guess we'll just continue to muddle along as bondsmen, servants, slaves, whatever, subjects of the government. It'll take a genuine catastrophe, the loss of all the free lunches, before the American people may again appreciate freedom. So for me, it's a sad and terrible day. The slaves have voted to reject freedom. I can't tell you how much that just bothers me. This is just terrible, terrible situation from my perspective. I may be over-exaggerating and other people may not agree, but this is not a good thing. Big government has captured people and they would rather be slaves or serfs or whatever than be free. It makes my skin crawl, makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck.
How old is this Alex Salmond that resigned as leader?
He's probably 50. I'd guess he's in his 50s. I don't know.
Well, you can't say, you know, I mean, he has one loss. And I'm not...
This was a big thing. The Scottish people have been grumbling about regaining their freedom for three centuries. All right, this isn't a small thing. This goes to the heart of what it means to be a Scotsman. And they've been saying, oh, one day we'll be free again from England. And they had the chance, they voted, I forget that. We'd rather hang on to the pensions and the free lunches and whatever. This is a terrible embarrassment for Scotland. I mean, there are going to be people whose hearts are broken over this. Sean Connery has been a devout advocate for Scottish independence throughout his life. And he was a prominent spokesman. I don't know, he's got to be 80 years old now or thereabouts. I don't know how old he is. But he was a prominent spokesman for the independence movement. I know he's got a tattoo, Scotland Forever, or something like that. He's always been in favor of Scottish independence, and he's watched it dissolve right in front of his eyes. They had the chance, and they said, we don't want it. I wouldn't be surprised if that's enough to put Connery underground. I wouldn't be surprised if he dies in the next 6 months, just because this is heartbreaking. This is the sort of thing where there's a sense, I would imagine, there's a sense of betrayal and a sense of failure. I mean, some of these people that advocated independence, they've got to be asking themselves, where did we go wrong? This should have been a slam dunk. People should have stood up and said, yay, I'm for freedom. You know, some of you, there was that movie with Mel Gibson, and I don't remember the name of it.
Braveheart,
yeah, that's right. And he played William Wallace, if I recall the name correctly. Mm-hmm. And at one point, the motion picture, there's a battle preparing, about to start, and he's riding on his horse, trying to inspire his men. And he says, they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom. Bull crap. The Scottish people just voted to be slaves. They should be ashamed of themselves. They could have lifted up a torch for all mankind. They could have inspired people around the world. And they said, nope, let's stay on the dole. Let's stay on the dole. You know, Scottish people, Scottish men, they've worn kilts for years. Well, right now, they should stop calling them kilts. Kilts are for men. Right now, they should call them Scottish petticoats. That's what they're wearing, Scottish petticoats. It is a shameful day. They have turned their back on freedom and independence. I don't know. It's just, it's galling to me. It's a terrible, terrible. I don't like seeing this happen at all.
Well, I don't know.
I do. That 30 seconds got 25 seconds to go until it's time for commercial. That's what we know, don't we? That means
the biggest thing with what's going on is whether the vote was rigged. I think they were bought out. I think some of the politicians were bought out. I mean, Cameron was over there all day long promising everything, and the people bought it hook, line, and sinker, just like anything else. You dangle a carrot in front of them.
And said, yeah, let's be slaves.
You dangle a carrot in front of anyone, and a lot of them will take it and saying, well, you know what? They're going to give us this and this and this, so maybe it's the next best thing.
Not interested in carrots. We are interested in cake and ice cream. Carrots. Carrots is kind of healthy. We're not interested in carrots. Whatever you want to entice us, do work contrary to our own interests, we need some cake. Lots of plastic. I like apple pie. I'm Alfred Addisk. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
We're going to continue with the 90% silver, but I am going to lower the price with the big correction today that we had in silver. I'm going to lower it to $700. And $40 for 90% silver, $50 face value. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And don't forget our newsletter that comes out on Monday afternoon, closer to the evening. And certainly a lot of things are going on now with the markets, and you know, everybody's confused, scratching their heads, thinking, and I mentioned it several times, we very well could see gold hit 1180 one more time. It would be the third time that it hit 1180, I believe it was. And so, you know, maybe we're heading in that direction before we see the pop back up. But again, the fundamentals, folks, they're you know, you can't deny that we have problems. I don't care if Alibaba would have surged 138% in their IPO debut. You know, everything is just so glossy and happy, and everybody feels good, Al.
Well, I've got an article that'll be in the newsletter. I think it'll be in the. I think it's in the newsletter. I don't remember if I've got it in this newsletter or if it's getting ready for next week. But people talk about, there are people who believe that the markets will not correct, there won't be a correction,
mm-hmm.
that the sky is the limit, that
mm-hmm.
the prices in the markets are going up and up and up. And in fact, saw one report where 87% of the investors in the market believe it's going up, and only 13% think it's going down. Now, the reason that's important is because, again, that fundamental formula for wealth and investing is you buy low and you sell high. It is a contrarian philosophy. It has to be. The reason the price is low is because everyone agrees that whatever it is you're investing in is worthless and it's not going to become valuable anytime soon. And that's why the price is low. And therefore, that's the time to buy when everybody says, now you have to look for good investments. You can't just buy junk. But if you can find a good investment that has a very low price at a time when everybody is saying, hey, that's going nowhere, that's the time to buy. That mentality, when virtually everyone else says it's not going to go anywhere, that signals the time to buy. That is the buy low. That's the time when everybody rejects it. Similarly, when everyone believes that it can't do anything but go higher, that's part of the mindset that always occurs at the sell high moment. You're going to sell when everybody says, hey, this is going higher and higher and higher. That's the time to sell. That's the mentality. And what this points to is when everyone thinks that things can't go but one direction, or when at least the vast majority, say 87%, they think it can't do anything but go up. Well, historically, that begins to signal that this thing, you are now at or near the sell high moment, speaking about stocks. Everybody says, or 87% say it's going up. They have to be wrong. When you can get a legitimate price in the market, you know, the purpose of markets, people talk about markets, and they say the purpose of the market is to discover a true price for a commodity, for a stock, for whatever it is you want to invest in. You're going to find that true price when about half of the people say this is going up. And about half of the people say, oh, no, it's not. It's going down. When it's a 50-50 split, you actually have a very close to a proper price. And the one thing you can be pretty sure about is that when it's 50-50, 50% are long, 50% are short. All right, 50% say it's going up, 50% say it's going down. It might go up, it might go down, we don't know. But it won't go very far up. And it won't go very far down. We have a pretty much a legitimate price because we've got a 50-50 split, and this is in a free market that's not being manipulated. Now, if you're in a manipulated market, then it's another story. But in a free market, 50-50, you have discovered the price. But when you've got a market where 87% say it's going higher and only 13% say it's going lower, you have not discovered the price. And you can bet that any time you see a market that's 87 to 13, there's going to be a major correction. And I don't care if it's 87% say it's high and it's going higher, or it's 87% that say it's low and it's going lower. The majority will be wrong. We don't have a legitimate price. A legitimate price discovery is not taking place at this time. If it were, we'd be somewhere in that 50-50 range. We'd be closer to that in terms of investor sentiment than we are 87-13. I don't know if that makes much sense to people, but it strikes me as an interesting insight, and I suspect it's true.
Mm-hmm. You know, prior to
the program. So what's it tell us about the markets right now, Melody, or at least the equity markets? It says they're sitting on the edge of a major correction. And I'm not the only person, by any stretch of the imagination, that believes that's true. You can't hardly without people warning. Even people that are in favor of the equities markets are saying, yeah, there's going to be a correction here.
Yeah, the funny part about it is they don't give any indication why they believe that you're going to have a pullback, only because it's going to be a natural pullback. You know, something goes, you know, there isn't anything that continues to rise forever.
No.
Things pull back, they have to consolidate, and then if they're going to take another leg up. And I think that's basically what we're seeing gold do. However, it's all those you know, all these economists and analysts that talk about the market pulling back, they don't talk about the why. You know, what's going to bring it down? Other than, oh, it just can't keep going up. Well, there's problems with the stock market. You know, it's going to be another month before there's no more bond buying. You know,
the Federal Reserve is no longer buying any of the government's bonds.
Plus, they've just extended payments to December 11th. I believe the Senate's going to pass it. I don't know if they voted on it yet or not. But
payments for what?
Keep the government going.
There's a waste of money.
So they're pushing that through until after the election. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that are coming to head at the end of
this year. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's just coming. It's like the news we see coming out of the Ukraine and coming out of Iraq and around the world. And even Scotland, that's now a dead story, at least for now. And there'll be something similar coming out of the Spain and the Catalan in the near future. I've used the analogy over the years, the Memorex commercial from back maybe in the 70s, I'm not sure. And they have a glass, and they have somebody hitting high C, and the glass starts to tremble and shake, and all of a sudden, bang, it just practically explodes, and they say, is it live or is it Memorex? You know, did the singer do it, or was it the recording from Memorex, the sound that collapsed the glass? We're living in a time when the whole world is beginning to tremble and shake and vibrate like that Memorex, like that glass in the Memorex commercial. And it doesn't mean we're going to see something snap, but it certainly means we might. And that's in terms of global political events. The same thing is true in economics right now. We've got the markets are crazy. You know, and one of the things to recognize is that when we see one of these moments when the market is 87% say, that's got to go up. There's nothing else possible. It's going to go up and it's going to keep going up. When 87% say that and 13% say, no, it's not. It's got to come down. That distortion, the market can go up, it can go down. And even at the 50-50, we can have 50 go up $5. And then everybody kind of moves up to $5. And then half say it's going up and half say it's going down. All right? And then maybe it goes up another $5. But again, we get that 50-50 and 50-50. When we have a distortion where 85, 90% of the people believe the market is doing one thing for sure, you can almost bet that the market has been intentionally distorted by somebody. We have to ask ourselves, why don't we have that 50-50 split? Or 51-49, 50-48, but in that neighborhood. Why are we up at 87-13? And that's because someone is manipulating the market. Someone is manipulating public sentiment. And it's probably our government and the Federal Reserve.
Well, it certainly is, and you're Mike, you're beginning to break up a little bit, so maybe at the break time we'll have to get you connected. But, you know, there's also all kinds of predictions about where there's going to be October surprises. Polls, you know, they think that the Republicans will see gains in this November elections. But there's this Bob Beckel. He's a former Democratic strategist, and, you know, he doesn't think so, and he has this program, but he thinks that the Democrats have something up their sleeves, and I know he's talking about the election and so forth, but yet, you know, I mean, it's like everybody's expecting something, and so it really surprises me that you have these higher numbers that believe the markets are going higher. I mean, anybody with a half a brain can figure out that, you know, the things are not good in this country. I look for good news. I look for job growth. I look for all these things. And then I look for something to back up the numbers. And you can never find anything. You can find little bits and pieces, but certainly not the meat that you need to back up that, you know, things are getting better in this country. You can walk down Main Street of any city in this country and see who's doing better than what they were 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. Hamburger reached $4, an all-time high for hamburger. But heaven forbid, if anybody talks about inflation, you're insane. So,
yeah, I know.
You know, things are not good in this country.
And that's the point behind this. And one of the big reasons we see the 87% think it's high and going higher, and 13% say the other, they're in the opposite camp, is because the Federal Reserve has been implementing low interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
And making, and they've been, in order to make an easy money policy available. And when we have low interest rates, it means it's cheap to borrow money. Now, the banks don't want to loan to the great unwashed, because we might die, or we might be unemployed, or whatever, and we might not pay back the loan. But the banks prefer to lend to established corporations because they have the highest probability of repaying the debt. And the net result is the bank may not want to lend any money to me, but they're glad to lend money to major corporations, and the major corporations are glad to borrow it at low interest rates, and then they go out and they use the borrowed money to buy stock. Now, insofar as that's true, the Federal Reserve's low interest rates are stimulating the purchase of stock in the markets. And that purchase that creates demand for stocks, the... I heard you. Am I breaking up again, Melody?
No, you're not. Go ahead.
All right. Well, it stimulates the purchase of stocks, and we have an artificial demand that isn't really there in the market. It's not from the people. It's from corporations that are getting money at dirt cheap prices from the banks. They're just using it to buy stocks, and that's what's pushing prices higher. Is that a sufficient basis to say the true value of the stock is rising? This is artificial. If and when the government ever starts raising interest rates again, it will make the cost of borrowing money to go out and buy stocks, it'll make it higher. It'll raise the cost. And the corporations that currently are saying, oh, let's go buy some stock because they're cheap, we'll use borrowed money, and we'll bet that the stock goes up faster than inflation rate, and therefore, blah, 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 we'll make money on the deal. Once the interest rates start going up, the banks won't borrow as much, there won't be as much demand for stocks, the price of stocks will begin to fall again. So the Federal Reserve is probably the number one cause of the rise stock market, and that's not news. I mean, there's plenty of people that are of the same opinion. And if and when interest rates go higher, this is going to end. But the most important part is, where do you want to invest your money in the meantime? Do you want to invest your money in something that is, you deal with tangible reality? You want to invest your money in fundamentals. You want to invest your money in objective reality. You want to invest your money in objective facts. Or do you want to invest your money in illusions? Do you want to invest your money in fantasies? And that's what the Federal Reserve is creating right now. You know, when they knock the interest rate down to next to nothing, a lot of people who are borrowing money say, gee, that's great. But what do the people who are lending money have to say? They're sitting back and saying, that's terrible. I'm being put in a position where I can't lend my money except at an interest rate that's so low, I'm bound to lose money. Someone is being robbed in order to maintain the illusion of a persistently rising stock market. And sooner or later, that robbery is going to come back to bite us all. And when it does, then we're going to pay a price for it. Those who are investing in reality, objective reality right now, will not be called to pay that price. Those that are investing in the fantasy created by the Federal Reserve are going to lose much of their assets. Let's take a break for some more commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom, and we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. Thank you.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
We have a question from Phil. He's from Canada. And this was in reference to earlier in the program when we were talking about Scotland. And he asked how... were you disappointed in 1980 and 1995 when Quebec voted against separating from Canada?
I was. I certainly wasn't disappointed in 1980. I wasn't politicized at that point in life. I mean, I was just fat, dumb, and happy, and I didn't care about some of the things happening politically. 1995, I didn't really begin to understand what I've come to think is what's going on in this country. I didn't begin to understand until about 1990. 1995, I paid no attention to Quebec. But I'll tell you one of the things that did disappoint me, and that's when the Australians allowed their government to disarm them, and that would be, what, 3-4 years ago now? I'm not sure.
About?
But the Aussies. You know, these guys come across like, hey, they're all man, the rest, that sort of thing. They allowed the government to effectively disarm them. Oh, brother, I can tell you what. They can wear they get rid of your... I don't know if they wear any kilts down there in Australia, but from my perspective, they ought to start calling them petticoats. When you hand over your guns to the government, you have handed over one of the last vestiges of your liberty, of your freedom, of your sovereignty, of your... standing as a free man. I mean, it's not even when we see Japan surrender to the United States after World War II. Whoever comes up to represent Japan surrenders his sword. The victor keeps his sword, and the loser, he has to surrender his. It's a sign of being conquered, and what galls me is the people who will surrender without a fight. And sometimes that fight, it's not necessarily, you don't necessarily have to actually get into a physical fight with people. But sometimes that fight is just a matter of reading, getting yourself some books and some dictionaries, and taking an interest in history, American history, world history, where you begin to understand and you begin to put some of the pieces together and you begin to understand and appreciate some of the values that lay at the foundation of whatever made this country great. And you begin to realize we have an obligation to at least understand those values and then stand up and fight for them to maintain them. And instead we're watching Dancing with the Stars and wondering why the country is going to hell in a handbasket. It's because we don't understand our own fundamental values anymore. And we're not going to get a resurrection of freedom and liberty in this country until we do. You know, there's an old thing, freedom isn't free. Aphorism, old saying, whatever, freedom isn't free. Everybody hears it. A lot of people will give lip service to it. Very few people appreciate the price of freedom. You know, they say it's the eternal vigilance. That vigilance doesn't just mean looking out the window once in a while to see if anybody's sneaking in the backyard. That vigilance includes reading and writing and educating yourself, not getting out of high school and college and say, well, I'm educated, I don't need to learn anything more now. You keep on being educated as long as you live, if you're smart, if you're sensible. I think it was Jefferson who made the comment, I can't quote it exactly, but he said, those who believe in freedom without knowledge or education, I can't recall exactly, believe in something that's never been and will never be. You can't be ignorant and free. It's never happened. It's never going to happen. And those of you who think you have a right to remain fat, dumb, and happy, well, if you do, you're going to be fat, dumb, and happy on someone else's global plantation. But you will not stay fat, dumb, and happy and also be free. That isn't going to happen. You must be educated. You must learn. You must study. And if you're not doing that, you're sending this country down the river. You know, I've told people for years, need more dictionaries. How many guns do you have? You should have more dictionaries. You need more dictionaries than you need guns in this country. Go ahead, Naughty.
So, do you think perhaps that freedom is something that has to be lost before you gain it back? I mean, every time freedom is achieved, it's always through, you know, through being the slave and attaining and achieving and fighting. But is freedom something that can really be sustained over a long period of time? Because you have those who know how to drag it down. They know how to condition, and particularly in today's world where you have the media and you have the, you know, the ease in which to...
You have the fiat currency that can be spun out of thin air to bribe people with the promise of an endless free lunch.
Yeah.
I think the loss of freedom, we have more to fear from the fiat currency than we do from any amount of guns or tanks or anything else.
But my point is through the media.
People are buying us.
And it's true, because they are. I mean, they are dependent. But you also have the media and everything else who tell people they're free.
Yeah,
and their definition of freedom becomes distorted, or their definition of freedom fits their life. So many people might go through life.
Things. That's one of the, you know, one of the things people say, you talk about, oh yeah, we're free. Actually, we're nowhere near as free as we were when I was a young man or a boy. Back in the 1950s, a quarter of the people in this country who had jobs were self-employed.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, it's about 1 in 20. Why? Because the government has imposed so many rules and regulations that many of us can't afford to be self-employed anymore. And it's not just money. There are all kinds of people who know how to do a good job as a plumber or a roofer or even an electrician. They know the work. They can do it. But they don't know how to fill out all the forms that government has laid on them. You got to fill in this form. You got to apply for this license. You got to pay for tax. You got to pay this, that, and the other. the burden of being self-employed has grown so large that very few people can manage to do it anymore. It was central to the idea that we had a strong middle class, that we had a prosperous middle class. A lot of people were self-employed, and it makes an enormous difference. And now very few people are self-employed. We are a nation of employees, and that's not good for us. We would be much better if we had more people who had their own businesses. And you can't. And why? When government imposes all these rules and regulations and requirements to fill in the blanks and get these licenses and one thing and another, they are detracting from our former freedom. They think, and they can justify some of the rules and regulations. I understand that not everything sounds irrational, but still, somebody's got to sit back and say, wait, we got to let people, allow people the freedom to start their own businesses. You know, one of the things I'd do if it was in my power to do it, I'd say that the income tax rules don't apply to anybody who's not making at least $250,000 a year. And I'm not talking that I give employees or the lower middle class and the middle class and the rest of that a break. What I'm saying is all of this enormous regulations and paperwork and hiring all these accountants and everything else, that's fine for major corporations. They can afford that. But I'd allow a guy who's starting his own business, I'd let him fill out his income tax on a postcard. And I know there'd be some cheating and the rest of that sort of thing, but I think it would be better than crushing him and keeping him from prospering by too much regulation.
Yeah, but then again, Al, I mean, is it truly regulation? Or I mean, no doubt about it, but then again, you have your huge corporations that you talk about where they're able to do it, but they're able to move into these communities, and, I mean, we've seen Walmart do it, and how many mom-and-pop shops close because they can't compete. They can't compete with Walmart.
Yep.
They don't have the ability to purchase the volume that these places do. So, I mean, they're run out of business, not because of regulation, but because they can't compete.
Well, it's just one of the things. I'm not saying that these regulations are the only problem. I don't mean to imply that, but I'm saying they're symptomatic of people in Washington who are sitting there saying, hey, I've got an idea. Why don't we impose another tax? How about that? Why don't we impose another tax? And then we could have more money for the government. And we could have bigger pensions for the people who work for government. And higher wages for the people who work for government. And who knows, we might even have an extra $5 or $10 for people who are dependent on welfare or whatever. But someone's got to understand that government's just gone too far. It's a necessary evil, there's no question about it, but it's not necessary that it be the dominant factor in our lives. And it has become that. The government plus the Federal Reserve, the monetary system and the government, they are wedded together in ways where, you tell me, what is the government? Is it the government? Is it the Federal Reserve? Is it both of them? Who's given who orders? Anyone? Somebody's got to be pulling the strings. It's not me. Melody, are you pulling the strings?
Nope, I'm not a string puller.
But
you also...
Not so true.
And it is true, you know, too, when you do talk about regulations, and it did escape my mind, you can bring in these bigger corporations and so forth. They give them, free taxes, free tax zones, and just so they come. New York, I mean, they're working real hard in order to bring businesses into New York,
and they say
and basically sell out the cities in doing so.
And they say they're going to create jobs,
but the
truth of the matter is this: they're going to destroy the local jobs, and they're going to take the money when a corporation comes in from out of state.
Just changing hands.
It's not just changing hands. It's taking the profits. A corporation moves into a city, say in Iowa. Nice little town. Walmart moves in. And people say, ha-ha, it's going to stimulate the economy. We're going to have more jobs. We'll have cheaper products. Everything's going to be great. Except for one thing. The profits that Walmart makes out of that community gets sucked out of that community, and they go back to the Walmart corporate headquarters, which is good for the corporate headquarters, but it's terrible for the community. There is a multiplier effect that's recognized by economists when you bring someone comes from Chicago to visit Dallas and he spends $1,000 here in Dallas. Economists understand that when he brings that extra $1,000 into the Dallas economy actually gets a boost equivalent to $3,000 to $7,000, as compared to just having the money in town. You bring in $1,000, you get $5,000 worth of economic stimulus. And this is well known, it's recognized, it's understood, all right? But what it has to be a zero-sum equation, which also means that if you take $1,000 out of the community, you are going to have a loss of, say, $5,000 in economic activity. And it doesn't show up on the books, but next thing you know, nobody can afford to put a new coat of paint on their businesses. And the little community just starts to wither and die, and nobody knows why. It's because that big corporation moved into town and started pulling profits out of that town and shipping them, profits that used to be confined to the community with the mom-and-pop stores. Those profits stayed at home, and the community fed on those profits in a way that doesn't show up on the accounting books. But they took the profits out, they sent them off to Walmart headquarters in Arkansas or wherever it is, and then it went from there, I don't know where it went. But the community just starts to wither and die, and nobody knows why. You can't deal with those foreign corporations. By foreign, I'm not just talking about Chinese, I'm talking about corporations coming in from out of town. They're bad business.
Murray sends us a quote from another great quote from Jefferson. I predict future happiness for Americans if they can prevent the government from wasting the labors of the people under the pretense of taking care of them.
Yeah. I understand. I saw studies, two of them by Rand Corporation, if I recall correctly, 10 years ago. First one calculated that out of every dollar government collected to help some beneficiary, women, children, blacks, minorities, whatever, only 25% reached the intended beneficiaries. They did the same study a couple of years later, and it was only 20%. Government says we're here to help the women, the children, the poor, whoever, and they collect $100 from you, me, and whatever, but the government keeps 80 bucks for itself out of every 100 it collects. It keeps 80 for itself and its chosen middlemen. And the intended beneficiaries, they get maybe 20% of what's been collected on their behalf. It's part of the racket. And it's going to continue as long as people watch Dancing with the Stars and they think they don't have to educate themselves. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. We will be back on Monday. Melody and I will be back on Monday. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? But still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. Money, always sunny in a